Okay, so welcome everyone, welcome, and thank you so much for coming today. I know it's a very difficult time, and we're all trying to get through this together, and you're doing great, so I'm proud of you, very proud of you, and we're up a little bit from where we were, a couple weeks ago, obviously. And also, we want to take a look at the other class. Now, look, ours are not doing so great, and the things that were flying. But look, they're clawing back. They're slowly. Remember, Galactic was down. I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 stuff. The one is the newest one. The newest one is the initial public offering here, the Beyond Meat, down for almost $4,000. But you guys have actually held up better than the market as a whole. Let's take a look at the investment club, because what they did is they're down 30%. They took on some of the stocks that had been beaten down, like the Boeing company, which is now down 5,000. They took out the Caribbean cruises. Someone said, let's buy cruise ships, right? It's like getting in front of a freight train. And sure enough, they're the ones that have gotten hit the hardest. And here's an airport. This is an airport company based in Mexico. And obviously, tourism to Mexico has just disappeared. But notice the ones you think, some of the most expensive stocks like Apple and Amazon, they've actually held up, and Microsoft, the tech stocks have held up better than the much better than the market as a whole. So boy, isn't that a strange situation? Usually you think those would be the ones who get hammered the most, but no. So you guys are, I'm proud of you because you are holding up a lot better than the market, and you did Apple also, and then there's a energy company, which energy companies got killed, but this one actually is holding up better. And yeah, so you did pretty darn well. All right, so today, what are we doing today? Well, today we are going to finish up Chapter 6. We had worked on the dividend discount models before the end of the before the break, and hopefully, I know there's all kinds of things, distractions. But you're working on those worksheets because those calculations are so important. Not because we have any belief that they're going to be correct, but because they help us understand the value of a long-term orientation. And the exam is going to start this Thursday online. So there's two parts of the exam. There's the true false, multiple choice type questions. And then there's the calculations, and they're going to be just like the worksheets, just like the assignment. We're going to have another session this Thursday evening. So, and also we'll be doing the worksheets today. What is this guy? Go away. I want to go away. Go away. I hope you're not. My apologies. My VPN is also now screaming at me. Okay, so go away, VPN. Virtual private network. I don't want that on now because that slows you down. Okay, so we're going to get started we're going to review a little bit of the dividend discount models. We'll run through the ones models we've already done, and then work on the worksheets. Okay. All right. So now let's see if I can figure this out here. Not that one. I wish I could get rid of this thing at the top. I can move it. Can I move it somewhere else? No, I guess I can't move it. Hide floating meeting controls. There we go. Okay. Press this. Okay. There you go. That's what I want to do. I want to hide those things. Okay. So let's take a look at, here we are. Last Thursday before the break, we went through the dividend discount model. And hopefully you've done the worksheets a few times. Please do them over and over and over again. I know sometimes you think, what am I doing? I don't actually worry about it. Don't worry about it. Just keep working. Now, as we said, the dividend discount models use the future dividend streams, the future cash flows the stock is projected to produce. Okay, So let us now go through, we're going to slide through these quickly, because what we've already gone through all these. Basically what we're saying is, do we want what kind of return do we want? And if we want that kind of return, what does it tell us about values in the future today? If we're going to get $21,589 in 10 years, and if we have a 8% rate of return that we require, then that's worth to us $10,000. That was the example we did. But now, how do we get rid of this thing? These are supposed to help you. How do you get rid of them? That's the kick. I don't want to exit. No, I don't want to stop presenting. I just can't. You can't get rid of them. I don't know. There it goes. Finally disappears. So we're going to use the dividend discount models. So we went through the growth model, and that's relatively straightforward. The annual dividend divided by the required rate of return. That's assuming dividends are not growing. So you'll see utility where dividends are not growing. And then we did the constant perpetual model, which is basically the same model, the zero growth model, but now we add these two quantities to account for the fact that they're growing their dividends. And we saw several examples, 3M, McDonald's, Target, Honeywell, Altria, where companies have been growing their dividends very smartly, very strongly. And they're not alone. Now we expect dividends to take a pause or maybe get cut because of the Great Recession that's coming up. We see it coming because a lot of people are out of work. 3 million people applied for unemployment insurance last week. Oh boy. So that was the constant perpetual growth model. And then we said they get more and more sophisticated, and you don't have to worry about these two, the constant growth model, the two-stage dividend growth model, just forget about them. They're overly mathematical, overly complicated. But we said, well, what happens when you don't have dividends? Well, these models don't really work very well when you don't have dividends. In fact, they wind up giving you zero, which we'll get around in just a little bit. Now, this one, the discounted cash flow model, is my favorite, and it's the one I hope you will play the most with. In fact, there's a bonus assignment that we discussed. We'll discuss it again because we're going to get to the value line today, where you just start playing and just goof around with these numbers and realize that whatever we do is just total blah. We don't know what we're going to get, right? We just have these predictions, then they may come true. They probably won't. But here was the example we used, and I'm going to skip this one. I'm going to go right to the spreadsheet. And when you do these, I hope you will do them like this. In fact, I hope you will do them this way. So here is the example, and this should look familiar. In this year, from this company, we expect to get $2 in dividends. Next year, $2.20. The year after that, $2.30. And then the year after that, 2023, we expect to get $2.30 plus $27. Now, where does the $27 come from, some people say? Well, that's what we expect the price of the stock to be. We're just guessing. We know. We don't know what the price of the stock is going to be. We might look at the value line. We'll take a look at the value line today or some other research service that tells you what they think it's going to be. But we're just guessing. And then where do these numbers come from? We showed the present value table. And where is it? Over here. No, it is. Here it is, right here. Present value table. So we are expecting to get, what was it, 12%? So where does that number come from? 0.893. What that's telling us, is that if we get $2 a year from now, oops, didn't mean to do that, $2 a year from now, then we multiply that $2 times 0.893, and we get $1.79 about. So the present value, and this is what we say, and I know it sounds a little like, what is he talking about? The present value of $2 a year from now, if we have a 12% required rate of return, which is a little high, but it's not unusual. It happens, is worth $1.79. The present value is $1.78.6 or $1.79. So what would you rather have, $2 a year from now or $1.79 now? If your required rate of return is 12%, they are the same. And that's the basis of what our calculations are doing. So in 2 years from now, we go back to the table, and that number is 0.797. And so we do $2.20 times 0.797, and we get $1.75. And 2 years from now, $2.30, we go back to the table, 1.712, and we multiply that, we get $1.64. And then here's the tricky part. We get the $2.30 from the dividend, plus we say, hey, the stock is probably going to be worth $27. So for us, we can think of the stock as a future stream of income. Because we can sell it. We can sell the shares. So that's $29.30 times the present value multiplier for year number four of 0.636. And that's worth $18.63. You add these three up, and what the model is saying is that we believe the stock is worth $23.81. Now, the stock was selling for $22. So, hey, that's not a bad deal. That's a pretty darn good deal for us. It's just potential, right? It's just all potential, which is potentially good. We have to do a whole lot more research, and then we throw away all the results we did, and then we decide whether we want to buy it or not. So we discussed internal rate of return. The internal rate of return is not something we're going to do in this semester. It's something you normally learn how to calculate in a upper level or graduate level investment class, but that's why there are spreadsheets. And if we have time, which we should have time, we'll spend some time with the spreadsheets that calculate the internal rate of return. Okay, so we're reviewing here. I'm just running through these. I'm trying to take about 10 minutes to run through this whole thing before we move on. Now, as we said, see, notice it's a spreadsheet, and those of you who have worked with spreadsheets, you'll find, oh, this is pretty easy to work with. And then there's the internal rate of return calculation, which we'll work on later on because we've already gone through it. We'll go through it again later on. We want to finish up chapter six first. So now, here's another example. This is where we ended on Thursday of last week, a week ago before spring break. Let's say we're interested in a company that's speculative. Jeans or Us. Oh, we didn't have a joke. Here's your joke today. What did the one chromosome say to the other chromosome? Do these genes make me look fat? These genes, not blue jeans, but anyway. So here's a company that these are the kind of companies that I was a sucker for 20 years ago here in San Diego, because there are dozens of these biotech startups, and most all of them are going to go but one or two of them are going to become fabulously wealthy and fantastic and maybe even cure coronavirus. So here's a company that's currently selling for $21 per share. It pays no dividends. What do you want to bet? It's not making any money whatsoever, right? It's burning through cash because it takes, $500 million or $800 million to get that drug to market. And then maybe the FDA approves it. Maybe they don't. So in 5 years, we believe the stock is going to be selling for $50. Now, why? We might look it up on Value Line. We might extrapolate to how well they've been doing in the past. We might hear from another analyst. But we're just guessing. We don't know what it's going to be worth. And we're saying, if we're going to deal with this speculative stock, our required rate of return is 13%. Well, can we use any of these dividend discount models to make some kind of a valuation calculation? And the answer is yes. Sure, they're not paying any dividends, but if you remember the one we just used, we said the value of the stock is equal to the present value of the future dividends. Well, there's no dividends, so zero times anything is zero. So you're not getting any value from dividends because you're not getting any dividends. But remember that we then used the price of the stock, the expected price of the stock, as a future cash flow. So have I lost you? Anybody raise your hand if I've completely lost you here. What we're saying is the stock is going to be worth about $50 in 5 years. So let's go to our, where did it go? Here it is. And we said we want 13%. So 13% in 5 years, that present value multiplier is 0.543. Does everybody see that? If not, raise your hand, scream and holler, and do lots of crazy things to get my attention. There's Xavier, there's Janet. Let me get Janet here. And Xavier is here. Okay, great. So what we do, we go back to the presentation, is we say, look, $50 in 5 years times the present value multiplier of 543 is $27.13. So now, the stock is selling for $21. Is it a potentially good investment for us? Well, the model says yes. But think about it now, dear students. Now that you've done a little bit of research and seen different individual companies, some of which are, you know, very large companies with their roots deep in the economy, others are, you know, small companies or medium-sized companies that are trying to carve out a niche for themselves. Where would you put this stock on that risk versus return spectrum? Very risky, right? Exactly. And so it's not that we don't want you to invest in any of these. It's just that we want you to have your eyes wide open. Because sure, in 5 years, this stock could be $50. It could be $150. Or it could be 50 cents. It could be worthless. So this is very important distinction for you to be able to make. And so what I try to get people to think is, look, okay, fine. You want to invest in a company like this, a speculative company that may explode on the upside, be that 10 bagger, as Peter Lynch likes to call it, you know, because what's a home run, a four bagger, right? This is a 10 bagger, or it's a zero bagger in that it goes to zero. It goes or pretty darn close. So just so you understand the difference between large stalwarts, as Peter Lynch calls them, we usually call them blue chip companies, and speculative companies that may explode or implode. Questions, thoughts, ideas, comments, criticisms? Okay, so now what we're going to do is we're going to go to the website, and I want to quick show you that notice we're recording the Zoom sessions, and it works actually pretty darn well. So you can click on these Zoom sessions as opposed to recording just the audio, which I forgot to turn on my audio machine. But this thing has the audio, so oh my goodness, I apologize. I forgot to turn on my audio. Oh, I'm getting old. I am old. So you're going to see there's a one from last week, 2 weeks ago, right before the spring break, and then Thursday before the spring break, and you'll see this one by the end of the day today, and you won't see the audio here. Or maybe I don't know. There's got to be some way to download the audio. I apologize. Okay, so now we're going to now go to worksheet number one. Well, I already have it queued up. I already have it up on the screen here. So here it is. No, where it is. There's worksheet number one. Now, some of you, I'm not sure if you're used to Google Docs, but this is what you'll see when you go to the worksheet. We've already discussed this. We'll discuss it again. You do not have edit access. So what some people do is they request edit access. If you do that, I'm going to send you back an email saying, no, I'm not going to give you edit access because this is my copy. This is the master copy.
Good morning.
Sorry? Hello? Okay. I thought I heard somebody talking. I'm not going to give you edit access because this is my master copy. What you want to do is you want to do file, and then you want to make a copy. Somebody sneezing? File, make a copy, or a download as. If you want to use weird, worst word, you want to use Microsoft worst word, then you download as Word, or if you use OpenOffice, LibreOffice. But I'm using Google Docs, so I'm going to make a copy, and I'm going to give it the incredibly demonstrative name of copy of Chapter 6 worksheet. And now in my Google, this is a separate Google account. This is not the Google account. I have a couple of Google accounts. This is not the Google account I use to create my documents for school. This is my personal account. So in my personal account, now I have complete access to this document because it's now mine. So that's how you do it. Now you can goof with it, do whatever your lips, not too high, whatever your little heart desires. So now we're going to go back and do the very last one. And we did this in one of the, so some of you might have this look familiar to you because we did this last week in one of the worksheet sessions, as I remember. So the, let me go back to here. The worksheet sessions are also here it is for worksheet Zoom, worksheet online teleconferencing session. So these guys are here. If I click on this, it'll bring me to the session. See, so you're going to be able to see. This is what you're going to see also. So, and also it does closed captioning. It's very cool. So it's pretty amazing. I'm pretty impressed. And you can't hear it because it's, I got my audio turned off. So let's go back there. Okay. So now let's go to the worksheet that we just created. And we're going to go all the way down. Oops, wrong one. This is the one I just created. Go all the way down to the last one. So now the price of biotechnology nanotechnology is currently $15 per share. The company pays no dividends. Does it sound familiar, right? They're going to be in the same order as they are in the presentation and the worksheets and the assignment and on the exam. We expect the price 3 years from now to be $35. Now, where did we get this number? Maybe we used the value line. Maybe we came up with our own numbers. Some estimates, some analysts told us it was going to be $35. If our desired rate of return is 12%, would this be a potentially good buy? Hint, what's the only model you can use with this information? The only model you can use that when you don't pay any dividends is the discounted cash flow model, where we use the price, the expected price in 3, 4, 5 years to be our future cash flow. So again, we said we want, where's the character? $35 in 3 years at 12%. So we run over to our table at 12%. No, did I say 12% or 13%? 12%. Yeah, 12%. My apologies. So 12% in 3 years is 0.712. Does everyone see that? If I've lost you, please contact me. Please yell, scream, and holler. There's Carla Guzman is here. Okay, excellent. So now, and Nicholas. So now we go back to the thing and we say 0.0712, was it 712? No, what was it? 712, yes. So where's my calculator? Here it is. Calculator, $35 times 0.712. And what that's saying is we think it's worth $24.90. This is our present value. As the present value of $35 for 3 years at 12%. It's selling for $15. So we say to ourselves, hey, this is a potentially good investment. We want to get 12% out of this stock. We believe it's going to be worth $35 in 3 years. So the present value currently is $25. But hopefully now that you, I'm repeating myself, but there's a good reason for why. Now that you have seen the different types of stocks, and if you need some review, go back to that second to the last presentation in chapter five, because you're going to be, some of you already did the chapter five assignment where you chose what kind of stock it was. Was it a blue chip? Was it a growth stock, a defensive, cyclical? And so this is the kind of company that's very speculative. It could be worth $35. It could be worth $150, or it could be worth 15 cents. So that's the issue at hand that we must understand when we go into the world of speculative stocks. And what other people would say was, you're not going to hold it for 5 years or 3 years, Frank. I'm going to buy it now, and in 3 months, I'm going to sell it. I'm going to buy it for 2 months. Those are not investors. Those people are speculators. They are traders. And that's fine as long as they understand what they're doing. They're not owning the stock. They're renting it. they have no intentions of being a partner with that company. And you see, that's a different type of stock. I don't like to use the word investor because they're not investors. And I'm not trying to badmouth them, but it's just really, really hard to do. It's just very hard to do, as we saw from the beginning of the semester. You're up against the best in the world. Plus, you're up against people who have computers that run millions of times faster than you or I work. And so it's just a very difficult thing. Any comments? I want to take some time for comments now. Questions? Because I hear myself talking, and that's all I hear. I don't see any hands raising. I don't see any comments. Well, unfortunately, I don't get to see I wish I could. Wish there was some way I could see the chat, but I can't see the chat when I'm doing the sharing the screen. I don't understand why, but that's how it works. Okay, so let's now go back to the presentation.
To see the chat, I think you have to like scroll down at the bottom and click like chat, and then it should pop up because I have my chat popped up.
Well, I see it when I stop sharing the screen. I see it if I stop sharing the screen here. I'll see the chat, but when I'm sharing the screen, it disappears, and I don't know how I can get it back up there. Let me see if I can.
Have you tried scrolling the mouse down to the very bottom?
Yeah, I did. I scrolled the mouse to the very bottom of the.
It must be a different setup than.
Yeah, it's definitely a different setup. Show small active speaker. Yeah, no, and there's nothing up here. I'm looking at the more. I have to play with this more often, but no, as soon as I go out of share the screen, I see the chat immediately, but that's not how it works. So anyway, so let's continue now. Okay. I'll hide it. How do I hide it again? Chat one, hide the video panel, hide the floating meeting control. That's what I want. Okay. All right. So let's go back to the presentation. All right. There are other valuation models in chapter six. For those of you who have the book, you can't even go to the library to read it. There are a couple other models which are very similar to the ones we just worked on. They're similar to the constant perpetual growth model, and then the discounted cash flow model. They take into account depreciation and the like, but it's the same idea. It's the same idea. You're discounting, and I know that verb sounds dumb to say because you're not going to the grocery store or the mall and getting a discount on things. We are bringing those future cash flows back to the present, so we say we are discounting for those future cash flows to the present. We're discounting them to the present. What are they worth to us today? And so we won't have time to do the residual income model or the free cash flow model, but they're essentially the same. They're very similar. Okay. Time for questions, time for reflection. Okay, Piano, this is all great, but just where are we supposed to get all this historical information anyway? And just who decides what next year's earnings per share, sales per share, cash flow per share, dividends per share, et cetera, are going to be? let alone the expected price of a stock in 3 to 5 years? Well, before the internet, should we start using BI before the internet? This information was not readily available. Normally, you'd go ask your broker for it if you had a good relationship with your broker, which now you don't. You don't even talk to your broker. It's all electronic, right? If you want to talk to a broker, they're going to charge you $30-$35. Or you would use one of the securities industry's trusted information sources. Traditionally, the most respected source, and still, in my humble opinion, one of the best, if not the best, is the Value Line. Still one of the most respected and trusted sources of data and analysis. Traditionally, it was often the only source that many investors used for data and analysis, along with the company's materials, of course. You'd get the annual report and look at the financial statements. It is not cheap. It is expensive. It's $600 a year. But you can get it for free at various libraries when the libraries are open, mind you. I'm a big fan of the Value Line, personally, especially their timeliness and their safety indicators. This was going back a few years, but there was a study which ignored transaction costs, tax consequences, that only used their timeliness indicator, meaning this is a great time to buy the stock or it's not a great time to buy the stock. It showed how you would have beaten the market handsomely over a 20-year period simply by buying a stock when it received their number one timeliness designation and then turning around and selling it when it lost that timeliness designation. So that's a pretty good track record. But of course, it's no guarantee of the future. And I'm not trying to say you should only use Value Line. No, but it's what I like to do. I go, my wife is a big reader of historical novels. And so we go to the Point Loma, we're in between the Point Loma and the OB libraries. We go to the Point Loma library and she goes and starts looking through all these historical novels. And I pull out the Value Line, all several hundred pages of it and with my laptop and start playing around. And that's a fun day for us. I know we don't get out much. Anyway, slide number 45. It is a sip from the fire hose, folks. There's just so much information packed into this one sheet that it's just scary the first time you look at it. And I can just imagine the discussion that the authors of our book had with the publisher, because the publisher at the time, it still is, McGraw-Hill. But at the time, McGraw-Hill is one of the biggest textbook publishers, by the way, folks. They also own radio stations and television stations and magazines. And they also owned, not anymore, they split in half, Standard & Poor's. Remember Standard & Poor's? Well, Standard & Poor's also has competitors to the Value Line, but they're nowhere near as good, in my humble opinion. So the authors wanted to use the Value Line, and McGraw-Hill probably said, why can't we use the Standard & Poor's? And they probably said, because they're not as good. Okay, so here you go, folks. This is from Chapter 6. Now, what happened, not Chapter 6, it's from Chapter 6 from the 6th edition. What happened is when McGraw-Hill split, they no longer used McGraw-Hill as the example. They started using Procter & Gamble, I think. I remember, yeah. But still, it's the same idea. So here's McGraw-Hill, the company, as a stock, as an investment. Notice that the timeliness was 4. They didn't think it was a great time to buy McGraw-Hill. It was in the depths of the Great Recession. Safety, though, they said it was 2, which is, means a pretty darn safe company. We believe that they're not going bankrupt anytime soon. Technical. This is their, I don't know how they do it, but we'll discuss technical analysis in a couple of weeks. It's a little bit of voodoo. The technical indicator is 3, which is average. It goes on a scale of 5. Beta, 1.2. What is beta? We'll discuss that later on in the semester. It's if you have a beta of 1, that means if the market goes up 10%, your stock should go up 10%. If it goes down 10%, your stock should go down 10%. If you have a beta of 2, if the market goes up 10%, your stock should go up 20%. And it's just looking at historical data. So that's just the first little box here. Look at everything else. Right? Look at everything else. But remember, remember that we were in our assignment, in our worksheets, and then our assignment, we're saying, let's assume the dividends are going to go from, $2 to $2.20 to $2.30. Well, here are the dividends declared per share. So in 2009, they were 90 cents, and they believed by 2012, 2013, 14, the dividend should be $1.10. And notice the sales per share, the cash flow per share, the earnings per share. So when we set these assumptions, let's assume that sales are going to go up 6% or 5%. Let's assume that the dividends are going to go up at this constant rate. We now have someplace we can go to see what they've been doing in the past. We can see the past, and then we can extrapolate into the future. And look, the stock at the current price was $28. They believed in 2012, 13, 14, that it'd be anywhere between $50 and, say, $68. So they're giving you a range of what they believe the stock is going to be worth. So you see how we can look out 3, 4, 5 years, and we don't dare go anywhere farther than that. And that is why, if you remember back in Chapter 4, when we were talking about mutual funds, I like it when I see, personally, when I see mutual funds that hold on to a stock for 3, 4, 5 years, because they're doing the same thing that we're doing, right? But they have a whole lot more research. They have entire teams of analysts and the like, and they're all around the world. And so they are doing pretty much the same thing we're doing right now. They're saying, well, what does it look like the next 3, 4, 5 years? And that, to me, is a better way than trying to determine what's going to be in 3 weeks or three hours or whatever. But hey, that's why there's chocolate and vanilla, and some people like strawberry. So any questions, any thoughts? Is this cool? Yes, it is, dear students. It is, I think it is. Okay, there's the sales, the operating margin, the depreciation, return on total capital, all the things that we're going to learn more about: return on equity, return on capital, return on assets in the next chapter 17. And I wish I could get rid of this guy here. I can't. I think you see this, don't you? You see this thing down here. How do I get rid of this? I don't know. Anyway, so here are the quarterly sales, the annual. Here are their annual rates. Remember we said there's sales for the past 5 years, and what do they expect them for the next 4 or 5 years? The cash flow per share, the earnings per share, the dividends per share. What's the growth rate been? So here is one, and I think one of the best, if not the best, places to find the data that you will use to make your calculations. And indeed, the Chapter 6 assignment is just like the worksheets. It says, okay, assume the dividends are growing this way, assume the earnings are going to grow this much. But the bonus assignment says to you, dear students, get one of these Value Line or two of these companies using Value Line. And unfortunately, the libraries are closed. So last week I sent you an email with all these guys attached. Now, normally Value Line is extremely upset if you make copies or distribute copies illegally using, not getting the proper copyright rules. So I would never do that. I would say you got to go to the library to do it. But I called them. I literally called them last week and spoke with Melanie. Was her name? No, it started with M. Marilyn. I spoke with Marilyn. And she just said, sure, Frank, go right ahead and do it. Now, she didn't know who I was. I mean, I said, we have Southwestern College does have a subscription to the Value Line, but our libraries are closed and my students are taking the class online now. And this is what we use. You would think they'd be, happy because you represent potential future clients. But, $50 a month, that's a lot of money for most people. That's what most people are putting away in their Roth IRAs. So it's just a little expensive for most people. So that's why we have libraries. And then I always read. Remember we talked about I don't know if we talked about it yet, but we'll talk about it in a bit. the 90-second, 60-second, 2-minute story of what's going on. And at the very end, they will tell you, these shares are untimely. The near-term picture is concerning given recent earnings shortfalls, but 3 to 5 year recovery potential is wide. And if we go back, yeah, the stock was selling for $28.73. And now they believe in 3 to 5 years. Would you be happy with that return? I would. You know, they're saying don't buy it now. Wait a little bit. But I would be very, very happy if we ran the numbers, if we actually did, you know, did a discounted cash flow, we'd see that we're doing pretty darn good if the stock goes from 20, you know, almost $29 to 50. And meanwhile, we're getting some dividends in the process. So let's put Value Line to the test. In late 2009, the price of Value Line was about $29. Their price prediction for early 2013 was in the range from around 48 to 68. In February of 2013, the price closed at $45, which is, you know, pretty darn good, right? And they made this prediction at the end of 2009 when the stock market had rallied from the depths of the crisis, but many people were still predicting the end of the world. By the way, some of them are still predicting the end of the world. And maybe it will be the end of the world, but it won't have anything to do with their stocks. It'll have to do with the fact that we're all dying of a stupid virus. I'm not worried. I'm not worried at all about the economy. We will rebound. I am certain. No stupid virus is going to get the best of us humans. I'm worried about dying. That's what I'm worried about not making it through because I'm old. Okay. So now here is another one. I'm sorry. What was this? Let's take a look at the fourth edition. Let's take a look at the Value Line for the fourth edition. So here's the fourth edition, and here we were in 2005 at $47, and they thought it was going to be like, you know, 70 to 85. And sure enough, how'd they do in mid 2005? Well, they had the range from 66 to 82. And in late 2009, it was hovering around $24. What happened? Well, you know what? They were right. They were absolutely right. They actually reached $70 in mid-2007, which if you followed along then, a couple months later, October was the peak in 2007. And then the market started falling as the credit market started reacting to the home loan crisis. And since McGraw-Hill owned at the time, they don't now, Standard & Poor's, yeah, they were at the center of this. They were the ones who were saying, these mortgages are great, don't worry. These liar loans are, don't worry, everybody. No, it doesn't look very good, does it? They then plummeted as the home loan crisis spread to the entire financial sector in 2008 and 2009. So there's one of the situations, like the coronavirus, that you cannot or you should. People say to Standard & Poor's and the other rating agencies, you guys were asleep at the wheel. You should have seen this coming. And they kind of hem and hawed and said, we did our best, which is bull. They didn't. They should have seen it coming, but they probably did. Some of them probably did. They probably said, this is going to end badly. I know I did. I was one of the, but I didn't think it was going to be as bad as it was. So, you know, they're not perfect. The fifth edition, the tech, it was even uglier because that was mid-2007 when things still looked rosy and we just hit the peak. But what about the 2003 prediction? So here it was in early 2003, $55, $54, and they believed it was going to be, you know, anywhere from 90 to 110. And that's because the reason the numbers are so much higher is because McGraw-Hill split the stock. But still, they predicted it'd be around 90 to 10, and it was at around 120. It was $60 split adjusted. Because remember, if you split the stock, number of shares double, but the price goes down in half. So they were bang on the money for early 2003. I get a kick when some investors trash the Value Line. They make mistakes too, just like everybody else. But I sure would love to see how those investors' long-term results stack up against the long-term results of the Value Line. Who do you think would have the better results? I'm betting on the value line. Not that there aren't people who've beaten the value line. Certainly there are. But it just there are much more staid, buy and hold type of investment and service, which is, as I've told you in the past, my bias. I tell you just to make sure you understand that, you know, everybody's different and everybody's opinions are, you know, some people's opinions are great and some people's are not so great. And everybody decides how they're going to go about viewing the markets. All right, is it a casino? Is it a crapshoot? Or is it a long-term vehicle for building wealth? Cool? Okay, continue. Now, I apologize. I hope I'm not going too fast. I hope I'm not... he talked for 45, 50 minutes and nobody understood a single word that he said, but we all had fun playing with the pencils on our desk. But I hope you've seen that there are tools out there that you can use that people don't even know they exist. They just turn around and buy something because it seemed like, I don't know, it seemed like a good idea at the time. Somebody told them it was a good stock or they saw somebody on television. But now you have tools that help you, I say, point you in the right direction. But are these things something we should put any credence in? Do we actually believe our results? The answer is no. Slide 55. Once we have finished all our valuation calculations, what should we do? Should we really place much value in our predictions? The answer is no, 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 no. Rather, we should hurl them into the vast ocean along with the ashes of our dead pets and relatives. Shred them into millions of little pieces and use them as confetti at our next party, or my personal favorite, burn them in a huge bonfire as we dance naked under the full moon. We do these calculations to simply tilt the odds in our favor. Instead of placing any significance in our predictions, after we have finished, we should ignore them and ask ourselves a very simple question. Do I really want to own this company? Is this a company I would want to own if I could own the entire company? That's Warren Buffett's advice. Sure, you look at Nike and you say, you know, Nike's a pretty darn good company, worldwide, a marketing organization that, you know, people are nuts over their shoes. Other people just wear them because they're comfortable. Do I want to be the owner? If I could buy Nike, if I had whatever it is, $100 billion to buy Nike, I don't know what the market cap it is, but it's up there. Would I do it? And if the answer is yes, okay, buy 10 shares because you're a part owner now. Peter Lynch, in his book, which you're going to read, One Up on Wall Street eventually, right? He would, this is of course before the internet, before microcomputers were just coming around at the time, 1977 to 1989, he would put all his calculations and he'd cut out newspaper articles and he'd put them in a three-ring binder for each individual company. And he had hundreds of these things. And after he did all his analysis and research, he would then hold the binder in his hand and he'd say, this is Nike. They are, you know, he described them, and this is why I'm buying them, or this is not why I'm buying them. Don't forget their competitors. Make sure you know about their competitors. And he would give himself the 60-second, 90-second, two-minute story about why he wants to sell them or why he wants to buy them or why he wants to hold or whatever. Does that make sense? That I hope that – and it's not a guarantee, right? It's not a guarantee. But if you follow along these – calculations and make sure that your portfolio is tilted toward the companies that have done well in the past, should continue to do well in the future. You're not going to get rich fast, you know, you're not going to get rich quickly, but unless the world ends, you're going to do well. I think so. Oh, by the way, the value line, when you go look at, say, Coca-Cola, right next to it will be Pepsi-Cola and PepsiCo and Monster and then the other beverage companies. They put the companies of a certain sector all together. It makes it easy to take a look at the competitors. Questions, thoughts, ideas, comments? So, our very last slide, a final word on valuation. The problem is that it is easy to confuse the capability to make precise forecasts with the ability to make accurate ones. Any attempt to value businesses with precision will yield values that are precisely inaccurate. And so you understand, we get these precise answers coming from our models, but we know that they're precisely inaccurate. We know going beforehand that these calculations, that there's a 99.9% chance that it's not going to be the right, it's going to be inaccurate. Why do we perform them? These calculations help us identify companies that are prudent, long-term oriented investments. They won't make us wealthy quickly, but they will make us wealthy. And I have a wise client. He says, look, I don't have to win big. I just have to win. And I love that saying because, yeah, you know, I don't have to beat the S&P 500. I don't have to beat John Merriweather, Total Return or whatever, whoever the hedge fund of the day, popular hedge fund of the day, master of the universe is. I just have to build wealth over the long term. And this is from a book called Margin of Safety, which is out of print, which is sad because it's a pretty good book, but you're not going to find it too often. But a friend of mine has a copy, which he guards with his life. So check it out. If you ever get a chance to check out Margin of Safety, it's about 30 years old now, a little over actually. Okay. Questions, thoughts, ideas, because that was chapter 6, the most intriguing chapter so far. I hope you agree. Questions? No, okay. No questions. Hope I didn't put all you to sleep, just a few of you to sleep. I forget who it was last week who came in. They were in their bed. They had the covers pulled up over their bed. So Luis Marchand, is that Luis Marchand I see you there? Okay, so now let's take a look. Okay.
Professor?
Okay, hi, you, Luis, I got you. Let's take a look now. I got you, thank you. Let's take a look now at the worksheets again. So we went through worksheet number 1, all right? And that was, that's worksheet number 1. Remember, there's answer keys also. So if you go to the website, you'll see the answer keys. Hopefully you're using Canvas. You're walking through Canvas, and you'll see that the modules make it pretty easy for you to walk through the materials. Although I think the website's just as easy. So what instead of going through worksheet number 1 again, let's go through worksheet number 2. Okay, where's worksheet number 2? Here it is, worksheet number 2. So how's that? Anybody have any requests for anything else? We have 30 minutes to go through worksheet number 2.
There's a question in the chat.
Oh, okay, I'm gonna go to the chat. Let's see if I can pull this off. Chat. No, I don't see it. I got to stop the share. Okay, I stopped the share. There it is. How are you doing? I can't recall, but did we discuss how to predict a future selling price of the stock? Well, yes, we just did. So he gave us, this was, you know, this is over 40 minutes ago. But yes, good question, Giuseppe. We use the value line, or we do our own calculations, or we throw a number up in the air, flip a coin, because as we said, we really have, you know, we have no credence, no belief, no serious belief that that's really what the price is going to be in 3 years. We don't know what the price is going to be in 3 years. We're just guessing. And so we come into this beforehand knowing that, sure, value line says it might be that. We say it might be that. Somebody else, some other service says it might be that. But we're just guessing. We're just literally just throwing a number up in the air. And we want to be reasonable in our guess. An educated guess, if you will. But we don't know that it's That is the real value. Okay, any other questions? Any other thoughts? Okay, so I'm going to go back. I'm going to, So I'm going to start sharing. Whoops, what did I just do? I messed up. I did something stupid. Okay, share the screen. I'm going to go back to the worksheet. Okay, so now here's worksheet number two. And what we're going to do is I'm going to then do file, make a copy. Because remember, this is when you see this and it says request edit access, don't ask the owner. Don't ask me for edit access because I'm not going to give it to you. Do file, make a copy, or download as if you use make a copy. And we'll use the incredibly demonstrative name of copy of original chapter 6 worksheet. And so now we, and how can we hide this? Hide the floating media controls. Thank you. Okay. So now let's make it a little bit bigger. 125 looks good. Okay. So the price ratio models. Okay, if you haven't done so, you probably should. And I gave you the packets, the folks in the online, face-to-face class. It looks like I don't have any online students, all of you from the face-to-face class. So I gave you this packet. But if you go back and you, this is the formula sheets. So let's open a link in a new tab. And here are the formulas. So let's zoom to 125%. So the price ratio models are all the same. They're all basically the same. So let's burn through these pretty quickly. So let's copy that and go over to this guy right here. Right. Okay. So the price ratio models, somebody wants somebody's typing away and is hearing it. We take the, so let's read. Here's a real company. Now, what is the price of Disney? This was back in December. What's the price of Disney now? Let's see what kind of, because Disney people said, oh, it's a great buy. I don't know enough about it. We don't even have television in our house. I'm not a big movie fan. I like books. Let's see what Disney's actually, look, Amazon. People are thinking Amazon's going to actually do really well. Okay. So, Hello, Disney. Oh, come on. Yeah, why did they destroy Yahoo? Yahoo used to be so good. Why do I still use it is what I want to know. Disney. Oh, there it is, Disney. So look, it's on sale. Just a month ago or so, it was $117. Now it's $99. So let's go back and say the historical price to earnings per share. Well, this tells us the five-year average PE. Now, where do we get it? We can get it from ValueLine. We can calculate it because ValueLine gives us all the prices and the earnings from the last 5 years. So we take 19 times the current earnings per share. Well, where do we get that? We get that from the ValueLine, get it from Yahoo, get it from Disney themselves, $5.94. And then whoever told us, you know, ValueLine or the Yahoo or some other place, what's the expected growth rate? Well, they think that the earnings per share are going to grow by 10% next year. So that's 1 plus 10% or 1.10. Everybody understand that? 10% is not 1.01, it's 1.10. So if we multiply those three together, I'm going to get my calculator out here. 19 times 5.94 times 1.1. Oops, I did something wrong. 19 times 5. Yeah, $124. They're saying it's going to be worth $124, $146, or, pound sign. Okay, so about $124, which is not a big jump from the $117, but it's certainly a big jump from the $99 that it's selling for now. And these other two are essentially the same. The cash flow per share and sales per share are essentially the same. So let's do the, let's go grab the formula sheet. Let's go grab this guy, put him over here. Oh, I keep dropping this is my makeshift desk because I can't sit for very long. I have to stand. So now let's do that. So it's exactly the same, except instead of price to earnings, we use price to cash flow. Instead of earnings per share, we use cash flow per share. It's exactly the same. And so if you're having trouble with these, please scream and holler. The 5-year average price to cash flow is 13. That's what Valueline told us. And we find $10.69 per share of cash flow. Why is the cash flow so much higher than the earnings? Because companies like Disney have to put out billions. Well, not, I don't know exactly how much it costs them to do all their films in 1 year. But one film cost over $100 million, $200 million now. Which is so hard to believe, but that's what they cost. You know, they spent almost $200 million on that movie called John Carter. And people just didn't go see it. They didn't even want to do anything. I don't know why. You're talking to the wrong guy. But so 13 times 10.69 times 1.09. Hopefully you're doing this on your calculator too, right? You got your calculators too. 1069 times 1.09. And that's a lot more generous. I got $151. Anybody else get that? Oops, that's good enough. 477. Did anybody else get that amount? $151?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay, good. And then the last one, I'm not even going to copy the formula. I'm just going to grab the 3.1 price to sales ratio, 3.1 times the $38.43 times 1.08. Everybody understand that? 1.08, 1 plus 8%. And so real quickly, if someone's done it for me, but I'll do it. 3.1 times 38.43 times 1.08. And again, that's more in line with the first one, $128.66, whatever, 364. So that's more in line with the price to earnings ratio. I'm not as optimistic as the price to cash flow. So those guys are relatively straightforward. They're not very powerful, in my humble opinion. In fact, I don't even use them, to tell you the truth, personally. But we want to learn a few different models just so we can say we know those models, and we know that there are many more. Now, the zero growth model is very straightforward. We are only interested in that stock for its ability to pay us dividends. So we don't care about any growth of dividends. So here's American Electric Power. Now, I think they held up actually pretty well, as I remember, AEP. American Electric Power, $80. And what were they selling for? Whoops, wrong one. 90. Oh, okay, so they've gone down 20% too. I thought they held up. What was the other one? ED that had held up pretty well. Yeah, the other utility. So these guys went down quite a bit. 20. That's big for a utility, 20%. So the annual dividends were $2.80. Let's see if they dropped them. Maybe they dropped the dividends. No, still it's $2.80. So $2.80, dropped my thing again, divided by our required rate of return. Now, our required rate of return is 5%. So I'm going to do this here, see if it keeps it from dropping more. Okay, 5%, 0.05. So if we take $2.80 divided by 0.05, you get $56. It's selling for about $79, right? What was it? $80. It's selling for $80. So this is what we believe our market says, our model says it's worth that much. It's selling for $80 market price. We still think it's oversold, overpriced. We're not, well, that doesn't mean we shouldn't go look at it, but we're not going to get our 5%. it's at this price, Yahoo tells us it's paying us about 3.5%. And we could do that pretty easily just by taking $2.80 divided by 80. Let's see what it actually says. I don't know if it's $2.80 divided by 80. Yeah, 3.5%. It's paying about 3.5%. So if we're happy with 3.5%, it's better than 10-year Treasury, which is paying under 1%. Well, 10-year Treasury bond. Okay, now that was the zero growth model. It will be some kind of utility. So expect that to see that. And it'll be in the same order. Now, waste management. Have you ever heard of waste management? This is the kind of company I love. What do you think waste management does, dear students?
Trash.
They pick up the, that's right, they pick up the trash. 50 years from now, are you going to be goofing with Facebook on your Twitter on your smell phone? I don't know, maybe, who knows? But I know somebody's going to be picking up the trash, right? And it's probably going to be waste management and their competitor, Republic Services, and then there's a few other smaller companies. But those are the two biggies. So take a look at both of them because, you know, they're not going to make you rich real fast, but they're also not going to make you cry in your beer when they fall. I'm sorry? Question? Was there a question? I wasn't quite sure. Okay, no. All right, so let's say, let's see how they held up. Let's see how they held up. So let's see, waste management. They're down to 92, and they were 117. So again, not too bad, but not quite 20%, but still not great. So they've been paying $2.18 per share, and they've been growing their dividends at about 6%. And we want a return of, say, 9%. So what price would we consider waste management to be a good investment? So this is the formula, the constant perpetual growth model. And it's pretty straightforward. It's the same pretty much as the zero growth model, but with one major difference. We add this, here's the zero growth model. This divided by that, and by that over here. But here, we add the fact that the dividends have been growing at a constant rate. And of course, if the constant rate is zero, then 1 + 0 = 0. And if you have zero on the bottom, you subtract zero, you get the same exact thing. You get the exact same model if the constant rate is zero. But in this case, we think it's going to be 6%. So we take the annual dividends times 1 + 6% divided by the required rate of return, 9%. -6%. Okay, so now you got to do the top first, then do the bottom, then do the division. So let's put it here. The annual dividends, we'll put the parentheses, are $2.18 times 1 + the growth rate of 6%. And then we divide that by 9% -6%. We put the parentheses around there, so let's do it again. We know this is 1.06. Everybody understand that? Let's just do it again. $2.18 times 18 cents times 1.06. Make sure everybody understands that. And then what's this is? Whoa, 0.09 minus 0.06. Got too many parentheses there. So now let's go. Okay, $2.18. Calculator, please. $2.18 times 1.06. How are we doing for time? Not bad. Whoa. And that's $2.3108 divided by, and we can do that in our head. It's 0.03. 0.09 minus 0.06 is 0.03. 0.09 minus 0.06 is 0.03. So divided by 0.03. And we get $77 and about 3 cents. 0.02666666. So still, even after it's fallen down to 92 bucks at 9%, we're not too keen on waste management. Waste management is currently selling WM. Let's just do WM. is currently selling for about $92. So what would happen if we changed this and now lowered our expected rate of return of 7%? Because is it reasonable to expect 9% from a company that's like waste management, that's like a utility, it's not going anywhere, there's only so much trash? Hopefully there'll be fewer trash in the future. So what we do is, if we just simply do this again, I'm going to copy it and paste it down here. We do this again, but this time we lower our required rate of return to 7%. And this is where the models just explode. Watch what happens. If we do 7% here, because it's almost division by zero, $2.18 times 1.06 is the same, 2308, divided by 0.01, and now the model says it's worth $231. So you see, you start to get strange numbers, $231.08. So no, this is where when you start getting numbers like this, you just go, okay, that doesn't make sense. Maybe we'll get 7%, maybe we won't, but still, the model is saying that it's a pretty darn good deal at 7%, which makes sense. If you have a stock that's paying a certain amount of dividends and been growing that dividend at 6%, you don't have to get much from capital gains if you're getting 6% in your dividend growth. So you don't really need that much the stock price to go up to actually get that 7%. Okay, Peachy. Questions. Now, last two. Let's see if we can finish these two. Here is Yum Brands. Have you heard of Yum Brands? Well, they own Kentucky Fried Rat, Taco Smell, and Pizza Crap. I'm sorry. Kentucky Fried Chicken, Taco Bell, and Pizza Crap. Pizza Hut. You know, folks, these companies are very profitable because they're selling you basically garbage, salt, sugar, fat, and people love it. What can I say? So we're going to use the discounted cash flow model, which is the most important model in my humble opinion. And what we'd like to do is create a table. So I'm going to insert a table, and it is going to be four row columns wide by five low. Okay, great. So here we'll put the years, the future cash flow, the present value multipliers, and the discounted cash flows. Supposed to be a zero there. And if you don't know what I'm doing, don't worry about it. I'm just using the table feature of Google Docs, which Word has also. And I'll just make it nice and pretty and align them center. And I'll do all the same. I'll align everybody. Oops. Align everybody center. So what years are? Here's the for the next 3 years, 2021 and 2022, we expect to get $1.88 from dividends. Well, now we should really change this, because they're not going to increase their dividends in this. They're not even open, so they're going to be cutting. They're going to stop their dividends. So this is totally bogus, because everything's changed. But let's do it anyway. And in 2022, if the coronavirus had not hit, we would expect $2.12 in dividends. And Value Line, or we expect the price to be $110. So that's what we think it's going to be in 3 years. So that's $112.12, right? $112.12. Now, if our desired rate of return is 11%, what are these three numbers here? We go back to the table. Oops, there's the table. 11%, so 0.901, 0.1812, and 0.731. So let's see if I can remember them. I can't. So let's see if you guys do. 0.901, 0.832. 823 and 0.712. Let's see if I will remember those. 812 and 731. Okay, I was close. 812 and 731. Everybody got, are you with me? So now we multiply these guys. Now we take $1.88 times 0.901, and we get 1.69388. And now $2 times 0.812. I'm sorry, question, thought? Anybody, if you, okay, 624. And then 112.12 times 0.731, or $81.95972. And then what we do is we add these three up. We add these three numbers up. So I'm going to take plus 1.69388 plus 1.624. And we get, I get about $85.2776, or about $85.27, 28 cents. So we think the stock price, assuming that the coronavirus had not hit, we think the price would be 80, or the value is about $85. And at, a month ago, it was selling for 89. Let's see. Now, this is the kind of stock we should expect to get hammered. So let's see what happens to Yum. McDonald's got hammered. I know that. But I think it bounced back. Look, it was 89 bucks. And now it's $69. So that's about, 20-some percent that it lost. Actually, not as bad as you'd think it is. Okay. And look, Ralph's is looking for people. If you need any work, they need you to go on the front lines and serve people food, because everyone needs their food and their toilet paper. Okay. So questions, thoughts? Now, everything's changed, but assuming nothing had changed and the price were definitely 69 bucks, we would say, hey, this is something we want to continue to look into. And then, of course, we have to look at their competitors, look at the McDonald's of the world and the like, and the other jack-in-the-boxes and all the other places that sell you garbage food, because they are, don't buy the food, maybe buy the stock. It's like Philip Morris. Don't buy the cigarettes, but maybe buy the stock. Okay, so now, last one. We have a few more minutes. Okay, my apologies. Here is a real company, folks, BioLace Technology. Check them out. 63 cents per share. And I've been using this now for a few years because it's a company that's really interesting. But the price has gone from, $3 down to $2 down to $1. It keeps losing money. They're losing money, paying no dividends, but they have these cool patents on teeth cleaning and whitening technologies that should be popular, should be profitable. So far, nothing. But we expect, or the analysts tell us, that for the next year is $2.30, 38 cents. And we estimate the price to be $6 per share in 5 years. So this is a bit of a canard. Don't look at this guy. I'm saying that the analysts say it's going to go back up. So they're at least, they're positive on the stock, but it keeps losing money. But let's say we think it's going to be worth $6 in 5 years. Well, if our desired rate of return is 14%, would this be potentially a good buy? Well, 5 years at 14%. What's the present value multiplier? Go to the formula sheet, not the formula sheet. Go to the table. 14%, 5 years, 519. Everybody see that? Where I'm getting these numbers? Make sure, because you have to do that on your own next. So 0.519. So 0.519. If I take 6 times 0.519, the model is saying it's worth a little over $3. But it's selling for 63 cents. Do we think that this company is going to turn around? Well, we would have to do a whole lot more research. They're based up in Anaheim, in Orange County somewhere. maybe even go to the annual meeting and sit in and see what the employees are saying. Are they positive, or are they, everybody looks like they got a glum face and, you know, sad face, because this is the kind of company that could explode on the upside and go from 63 cents to $6 to $60, or more likely it's going to go to 6 cents and then 0.6 cents and then 0.0006 cents. So just so you know going beforehand, that a company like BioLase Technology could be a big winner, but probably won't be. And I am so glad that I didn't buy it, because this is the kind of company I was a sucker for 20 years ago. In San Diego, there are dozens of these biotech companies, which are so cool. They just have so much promise. And, you know, one or two of them are going to do it, like IDEC, which got merged into Biogen, and then Celgene got bought by another company. But most of them, they just turn into poop. They just turn into nothing. Okay, so we're here at 10 o'clock. Let me ask any questions now, because we're going to go through this this worksheet again probably Thursday night, and then we'll do it again on Thursday morning. If you have questions, we'll look at the – we'll review for the exam. We'll go through the Chapter 5 worksheets. You tell me what you want to do, and then if we have time, we'll take a look at the internal rate of return, net present value. These are concepts that you will learn about in the upper level finance classes, investment classes, and graduate level finance classes. And the cool thing about them is that there's a spreadsheet formula that just makes life so much easier. So you don't have to worry about them. You don't have to worry about learning how to do it. That's why we have computers. Cool. Any questions? Any thoughts? Now remember, this is being recorded, so this will be up on the web. It'll be up on the website hopefully by the end of the today. And I am done. Unless anybody wants to stick around, tell jokes. Unemployed joke. Did I tell you the unemployed joke? Let me tell you. Unemployed. I got a ton of jokes about the unemployed people, but none of them work.
Jesus.
I know. That's a good one. Current events. You got 3 million people unemployed. Unemployed rate. There's Ruben. Hey, Ruben, how you doing? Good to see you.
Sorry for being late. It's been hectic this morning for me.
Yeah, the whole world is hectic. So that's it, folks. Unless anybody has any questions, I'm gonna be signing off. I'll stick around for a little bit, but I'll see you. Thursday morning, of course, Thursday morning, 8:30, and then Thursday evening for the session for getting ready for the exam number two, which is exam number two. We'll go over exam number two also on Thursday. Exam number two is this week. So you'll have Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Please don't wait until Sunday to take it, but Sunday will be the deadline. Do it as soon as you can and be awesome. Don't forget to study Chapter 5, too. A lot of material in Chapter 5 that we'll review. Also, if you have questions. Okay, I'm done.
All right, Mr. P, you did get me right. This is Andrew.
I'm sorry, who's that?
Andrew.
Oh, Andrew, how you doing?
Good, good. I'm just asking if you got me on the roll.
I got you, Andrew.
Okay, cool.
I got lots of people. I didn't get Vincent. I didn't see Vincent. But I got Nicholas. I got Mr. Ringcone. Nicholas. George Navarro, no. Didn't get Verdi. Nancy Hernandez. Sarah, no. Tamara, no. Aaron, no. Xavier, I got Xavier. Nate, I got Nate Hernandez. And remember, you can always, it's always on the, it'll be, that's my wife's phone. She's been doing double duty, calling people and trying to keep everybody calm, especially my niece. Okay, well, I'll stick around for a few more minutes.
All right, Mr. P, see you next class.
Yeah, see you, folks. I'm going to stop the share. Stop the share and then stop the share. And then stop the recording.